proof that the adults like them more than the kids is that, there are some kids here. There's no kids here tonight. I mean, like, all the adults are raising their hands, so I think that's fun. We're going to look at, again, in Deuteronomy today, and I want to talk about the general idea of, and I couldn't think of the right words, the love of, and then, fill in your blank, your neighbor as yourself. That line is not in the book of Deuteronomy, so I didn't want to use that one. That's a Leviticus line. Love of the stranger, the sojourner, and then there's a lot of other people that are listed in this description. And really, the idea that I'm wanting to look at is just love of our fellow man, love of the other person that is out there. And I've been reading, I'd been listening to some lectures and some people making references to other good teachers in the past or some different things, and there was a rabbi from the early to mid-20th century, and he had some writing, so I thought, I'll read what he has to say. He has some essays on Judaism and Christianity, and I haven't read those yet, but he has a book, The Essence of Judaism, and I thought that would be interesting, because he was a really good thinker. What he was saying made a lot of sense, and so I've been reading through the book, and so much of the time, he was from Germany, he was dealing with the problems of Christianity. I was like, well, that's just Lutheranism, and that's just, and I was realizing so many of the problems that he was seeing in Christianity was problems with some of the denominational things that he was finding. And what he said about being a child of God, I'll say that rather than being a Jew, but just being a child of God, it was just, it's been really neat reading. I've appreciated it. My favorite chapter so far has been, I haven't finished it. I don't think it's going to go bad. It's been the one about loving your fellow man. That's why I don't think it's going to go bad. But it's been a really neat and fascinating chapter. And of course, he talks about love your neighbor as yourself, which we find in Leviticus chapter 19. And he talks about that, but what's been fun is the way that this teacher is using passages in the Old Testament and pulling ideas out of them that I hadn't seen the significance of them, and that's kind of what I want to do in looking at Deuteronomy today. He didn't make reference to this passage about love your neighbor as yourself or the other three passages that we're more familiar with about loving your neighbor as yourself because he's not using the New Testament. And I think this is really interesting, and this is one of those big and neat moments. With all of the laws that are in the Old Testament, the first five books are called the books of law, and some of them are just loaded with laws. By the time that Jesus arrives on the scene, it isn't only Jesus himself who is saying that the greatest law is love the Lord, and the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus didn't invent that. Others were saying that as well. So that was part of the Jewish cultural teaching at that time. And that's really, really fascinating that they could take all of these laws and however well a person does at keeping all the laws or not, they were recognizing that these two laws really summarize them up. And Paul repeats that idea twice for all the commandments, Romans 13:9, and he lists a few, they're all summed up in the one word. You need to love your neighbor as yourself. He says the same idea in Galatians 5, and James calls it the royal law. For if you fulfill the royal law, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, then you are doing a really good job. And then he starts to talk about how hard it is to actually do that. And so this is a big idea and an important thing for us to have in our hearts and in our minds. In Leviticus 19:18, I want to go ahead and read it aloud. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. That shows up a lot in Leviticus. It is the exclamation mark at the end of every law. So it's like he says, here's a law, and I'm going to make it loud. And he says, I am the Lord, and I am the Lord, and I am the Lord. I haven't noticed that phrase necessarily in the book of Deuteronomy, but the refrain that shows up a lot in Deuteronomy, and we're going to see that as we read through tonight, is remember that you were a slave in Egypt. So it would be something like, but you shall love your neighbors yourself, because remember, you were a slave in Egypt. And so that's the refrain that he keeps sending us to. I don't think any of us have been slaves in Egypt, but we've all been slaves. We've all been slaves, we've been caught, we've been lost in our sin, uncontrollably stuck in that. And we needed Jesus to get us out of that. And yeah, we said, dear God, help. And it's God who did that. God who delivered us and had us pass through the waters of baptism or through the Red Sea, you know, pass through those waters to have that saving and deliverance so that now that we can walk free, we need to remember that we too were slaves. And that's a big motivating idea. One of the big points here is that loving our neighbor is I am made in God's image. And I meant it to sound as vain as that. I, standing up here, I'm made in God's image. And every single one of you sitting down there are made in God's image. That just levels the playing ground, right? We're all on the same level. We are all made in God's image. And if I'm made in God's image and that guy is also made in God's image, then I need to recognize that he is God's image and he deserves the love that I have for you and for the people that are easy to care about. They deserve, the people that are complicated or difficult to care about, they deserve our love as well. You love your neighbor as yourself because he is as you are. That's the phrase is, I need to love my neighbor as I would love myself. But there's that idea there. I'm loving my neighbor because he is the same thing that I am in a lot of ways. And that's an important thing to think about. In 1 John chapter 4, we learn about all these different aspects of God and how God, in verse 8, God is love. And in verse 11, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. And if you want to turn to Deuteronomy 10, that's where we're going to open up reading. In Deuteronomy 10, verse 18, God, he executes justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Just like right out of nowhere. God, who has his peculiar people, his special people. In Deuteronomy 10:18, it says that God loves the other ones. God loves the other ones. And that's a significant idea. And so when the law, love your neighbor as yourself, was floating around and people are dealing with that and doing a good job with it or doing a poor job with it, Jesus makes it a lot more complicated by giving us the simple story of the Good Samaritan, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Got it. All right, here's the Good Samaritan. Okay, I don't got it. This simple little story made a simple little law a lot bigger or more complicated or opened up avenues of the ways that I need to love my neighbor as myself, ways I haven't thought of before. So that's what I'm hoping as we read through some passages, they're never going to come out and say love your neighbor as yourself, but it is going to say love the stranger. Reading some scenarios or some stories or some laws, it's just going to add more color and more light to this idea of the need to love somebody else. So it's not necessarily groundbreaking material, but really, I think, really interesting writings. Out of everything I've been reading lately in Deuteronomy, chapter 10, verses 12 through 22 is my favorite. So when I close with a psalm tonight, I'm actually going to just come back and read this again. I'm not going to do a psalm. I'm going to pretend that this is the psalm that I'm going to close with. So I'm going to read it right now. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 12 through 22. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and statutes of the Lord, which I am commanding you today for your good. Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth and all that is in it. Yet the Lord set his heart in love on your fathers and chose their offspring after them, you above all peoples, as you are this day. Circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and widow and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God, you shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear. He is your praise, he is your God, who has done for you these great and terrifying things that your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven. I mean, how many sermons can you pull out of that sucker, right? I mean, it's just loaded with really interesting ideas. I don't want to get bogged down in it. Clearly, the point that I'm really interested there is that moment there in verse 16 where we need to work on our own hearts to do better, but in primarily talking about the nature of God in verses 17 and 18, and then our activity ourselves in verse 19 that we need to love as well. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow. He loves the sojourner. He gives him food and clothing. And in that statement, is it because the Israelites were the strangers? And that's what sojourner means. Temporary inhabitant, newcomer, lacking rights, foreigners in Israel. Often translated alien or sojourner or stranger. Is it he gives the sojourner food and clothing? For example, you millions of people while you were slaves in Egypt and now that you're wandering through the desert, because in a lot of ways they were themselves strangers in that moment when this law was being spoken to them. Or is he saying to those people, God says to them, you are my special people, but any of the strangers who are among you here, I am still providing for them, or any of the strangers who may come in, I will provide. There's a lot of different ways that this shows up. I think it's just a really fascinating idea. Sojourner is a really kind of a soft word. Oh, it's just a guy kind of coming through, you know, stayed at the local motel. No one has a problem with a sojourner. But, well, I don't know, maybe I've been in some places where everyone complains about when the tourists come to town, so I'm going to see how everybody's attitude changes in a month or two. But the stranger, the alien, the sojourner, and alien really amplifies that image, right? The not of us, but they're here person. God loves them and provides for them and covers them. And he says, so you love the sojourner, therefore. The you is understood according to English grammar. So I'm allowed to supply that in there. You love the sojourner. It's this big command. I mean, verses 12 and 13, we're supposed to walk and fear and love and serve and keep God. Those are all upward-directed behaviors. This great adoration that we have for God. What does God do? God, who is in the heavens of heavens, and he's got all this might and this power. In this paragraph, he comes down and he cares for weird outsiders. That's a loud idea in all of this paragraph of the great love that God has done for us. In 17 and 18, he is the highest of all. So what does he do with his highest of all power? Well, he lives without partiality and he's not moved by bribes. And he defends the defenseless. And he loves the strange. That's what he's using his power for. But he doesn't have partiality or choose one person. Sure, he chose the Israelites and he loves them the most, but what does he do with all the strangers? He still loves. He still cares. And does he take bribes and just help out a certain select few? No, he doesn't behave that way. He defends those defenseless people and he loves those who are strange or outsiders. And so he uses his greatness, the greatness that is in and of himself, and he uses that for other people. And that's what makes God God. Otherwise, none of us would be alive and able to be what we are today if someone great had not come into each one of us to help us out at some point. And so we too need to help the lowly, help the loveless, help the outsiders, because we were, in verse 19, love the sojourner, therefore, because you were. He makes it very loud and clear for us. We need to change our heart. We need to change our behavior. We need to change our practice. This is even where he says that great, circumcise the foreskin of your heart. Circumcise your hearts. And, you know, it's a great moment in the Old Testament where we can say, look, the Old Testament was about the heart and not just the physical stuff. And we can see that that's what God is working at here. And this is probably, to me, the big if you're going to memorize a set of verses, this is the one to memorize tonight. I think it's probably the most powerful passage. We're just going to move through and find some other passages that it's just God wanting his people to include outsiders. And we're going to pick apart a few verses through this. In chapter 12, the whole chapter is when you show up, don't just worship there. Don't just worship there. You need to go worship where God says to worship. And one of the issues there in the first seven verses of chapter 12 is you're going to find idols. Don't use them. You're going to find where the places where they worshiped idols. Don't use those places. Go where God says you. And then we get this great line in verse 8. I love this one. You shall not do according to all that we are doing here today. Everyone doing whatever is right in his own eyes. It sounds really loosey-goosey, but like you can't just... It's, I think it's because they're kind of wandering through the desert. You're going to get to the land, and that's where you're going to do these things. And that's really the important part of chapter 12, and that's not what I want to talk about. If you jump down to verse 12 of chapter 12, talking about when you're going to do these practices at the place God said, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your sons and your daughters and your male servants and your female servants and the Levite that is within your towns, since he has no portion or inheritance with you. Take care that you do not offer burnt offerings at any place that you see. He gets right back into it. But there's this inclusion there in verse 12. You, your sons and daughters, your male servants, your female servants, and the Levite, because the Levite doesn't have anything. He doesn't have a portion or an inheritance. He doesn't have land. And then if you jump down to verse 18, when it's talking about when you're having, eventually you're going to have enough animals for meat that you're not just using them for sacrifices, but you're going to be eating them. When you're eating them, verse 18, but you shall eat them before the Lord your God in the place that the Lord your God will choose, you and your son and your daughter and your male servant and your female servant and the Levite who is within his towns. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God and all that you undertake. Oh, I want to read verse 19. Sorry. Take care that you do not neglect the Levite as long as you live in the land. The point of this chapter is you can't just choose to do your worship wherever you want to do or in whatever way you want. You've got to do it where God says to do it, and you've got to do it in the way that God wants you to do it. And one stipulation that he brings up a couple times here is he lists the people that we need to include. The whole family here is included. You and your sons and your daughters and your male servants and your female servants. And I'm including the word slave up here. That was one of the things that that I was reading in the book. Often, the translation of this word servant and slave is a very complicated thing. And some of the newer translations try to go with servant as often as they can, because slave is a really, you know, that's a complicated word that we don't want to deal with very much. But if you are a master and you have slaves, what do you have to include them in? This is a big deal. You are over them and you rule them and you tell them what to do and you tell them when they can work and when they, you got to keep working and you got to keep working. Now, when it comes to these practices, they are absolutely to take part in your whole family and the whole household and the Levites that's not in your house. Right? They're in the town. They're the ones that are serving you and serving the Lord, and they don't have land. They don't have the means to do this. Well, whose responsibility are they? Oh, I guess it's mine. Whether I'm excited about that or not. It's easy for us to exclude people. It's easy for us to just try to take care of ourselves. And we've seen this in churches, but I mean, we've also seen this in any business or any club, or any time you start getting people together, it's very clear that some are going to make themselves the big head honchos and the rest of the people are the lowly ones. And God is saying that the lowly are absolutely and specifically called out to be included in these activities. There's a lot of inclusion here, young and old, slave and free, whether people own land or not. Everyone is included in this. There's no elitism. And that's a big idea. When you read through the New Testament, yeah, you do see elders, and elders are these overseers, and you need to listen to them. Why? Because they have mastery and because they're older and they know, and that's who you should be listening to. That's really where their authority comes from. They don't have scepters, you know, to bonk you with. We listen to them because they know what they're talking about. And other than that one instance, or possibly when we're talking about, you know, within a family, once you become a Christian, you're at the top of the ladder. There's no steps higher other than Christ, and we're not going to get up that one. Like, there's the world, and then there's a child of God, and we're at the top. That's a big deal. And I think that these kinds of laws and instructions help emphasize that. There was a rich landowner, and he's got his whole family is invited into this. And he's got all these slaves, and all the slaves are invited into this. And the Levites, that's not even a part of his household, they are included and helped by him. We all have unity before God. So all these people are our responsibility. And why? There's this little phrase within verse 12, I think it is. Yeah, the Levite that is within your towns. Don't start, okay, which are the ones in our towns, and we're not going to help the ones that... No, don't think that way, right? Because if you end up finding out that there's a Levite that's not in your town, are you going to try to take care of him too? Of course you will. The point here is, what is it that makes him my responsibility? Is that we live together.
Well, he doesn't live under my roof.
Yeah, but we live together, and God is saying that we need to take care of. And it's just a little phrase, and I think that there's a lot of power and weight behind that. In chapter 14, we see some similar ideas here. In verse 22, it starts talking about the tithe. So on top of all the other things that you're going to give and to sacrifice, you're also going to do 10%. That's a big deal. It's not you give 10%, you do this stuff, and you do 10%. That's just kind of a minor one. But at the end of it, verses 28 and 29, at the end of every 3 years, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce in the same year and lay it up within your towns, and the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow who are within your towns, shall come and eat and be filled, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands that you do. So we have this 3 years tithe, and it's providing for the Levite and the sojourner and the fatherless and the widow. Now, it's not providing for your son and your daughter and your slaves, because honestly, that you're already feeding them, right? That's one of the points there. It's providing for these other people. I can't remember if it was a commentary or what, but it's talking about the landless people. These would be the people who they don't own property. That's really one of the big lines here, is my guess. I thought the order that they're listed in was really interesting. You know, Levite, that makes sense. And then the stranger, then the sojourner. I don't think it's because they're more important than the orphans and the widows. I don't know if there is a big deal here, but it surprised me that they were listed right there, right up in the heart of this. And so we are caring for and providing for these people who they can't provide for themselves. And why are we doing it? Again, these are the ones that are within your towns. That's it. Why do I have to take care of that person? Well, because they're a stranger and they're in your town. And it doesn't take much more than that for a person to be my responsibility. And that's teaching a lot about what my love, what our love is supposed to be. You know, they don't need to meet a lot of qualifications. They just got to have, you know, kind of be alive and somewhat near me. And they are becoming someone that I need to reach out to and love. So we're caring and providing for those who have no portion, for the person who has no defender. And you know that this is a big topic with God, because it's the purpose of an entire book, Ruth. The book of Ruth is this in action. And God took up valuable real estate in the Bible and gave us a story about taking care of some ladies. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And yes, there was the whole relative connection there, but that's just emphasizing how much more important it was when Boaz was jumping in, and he wasn't the only relative, right? And so we need to take the time to go out there and provide for these people. It says that they are going to, in verse 29, they're going to eat and be filled. No skimping out here, right? In John chapter 6, verse 11, it talks about in the feeding of the 5,000 that everyone ate to their fill. And I always love joking about how you know, the all-you-can-eat buffet that Jesus was providing, and And I know what most of the big guys there were trying to do, see how much miracle bread they could possibly eat. But that eating to be filled, that needs to be the way we measure what our love is behaving like. Am I providing? Yes. Canned food drive? I provided a can. What'd you provide? Well, it was canned pumpkin. But come on. You know, that doesn't quite cut it. We need to provide and care and fill people. The sojourners, the outsider, the stranger is listed second. In Romans 12, verse 13, it talks about being given to hospitality. The Greek word hospitality is philoxenia, which philo or philo, that's love, and xenia is where we get xenon or xena, like that's outsider and stranger. We get the word xenophobia, fear of the stranger, fear of the outsider. And the New Testament talks about philoxenia, which is the opposite. We need to be loving the stranger. Hospitality doesn't mean that you have nice tablecloths. Hospitality means that you have weird people that you are interacting with. And they're only weird because you have that difficulty, right? You're trying to reach out and you're trying to get with them and you're breaking down those barriers of weird that our society has lifted up. Even the outsiders are insiders because they are near us, is what we're being told here. Chapter 16. It talks about the Passover. I'm just looking at the headings, right? Verses 1 through 8 is the Passover. 9 through 12 is the Feast of Weeks, and then into the Feast of Booths. And I'm just going to read part of the Feast of Weeks and Booths. If you start in verse 9, you shall count 7 weeks. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time the sickle is put to the first standing grain. Then you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you will give as the Lord your God blesses you. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, the Levite who is within your towns, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow who are among you at the place that the Lord your God will choose to make his name dwell there. You shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful to observe these statutes. You shall keep the Feast of Booths 7 days when you have gathered in the produce from your threshing floor and your wine press. You shall rejoice in the feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow who are within your towns. For 7 days you shall keep the feast of the Lord your God at the place that the Lord will choose, because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and in all the work of your hands, so that you will be altogether joyful. Now, when it says here that you shall remember that you were a slave, that might have a whole lot to do with the whole purpose of the feast itself, right? But it's also coming after this highly repetitive and overly redundant, get on with it now, we get it, it's all these people, set of statements. And in this moment, it could be that all these individuals are listed so many times because it's law, right? And we all get tired when we're reading lawyers speak, and it's very specific, and it's very repetitive so that it's absolutely clear. That might be what Moses is doing here. He's repeating all the people from verse 11, and he repeats them again in verse 14, I think it's verse 14, so that nobody is excluded, and, oh, I'll have to do it for 11, but I don't have to do it in 14. That could be the point of it. But another aspect of the Old Testament in particular is that it's an oral or oral law where you read it aloud and people are hearing it. And when you hear these lists repeated over and over again, they really hammer into you how vital it is. All these other people, I need to include them in what I do when I am worshiping God. All of these other people. There's a lot of direct ones. Your son, your daughter, your slave. They are absolutely under your house. And then there's all those other ones. They're in within your towns and they're among you. And then Good Samaritan says everybody. You know, just, you know, there's, we're not getting out of this. These people deserve our love and our care and our concern because God has designed all of us in His image, to be equal, and to get out there and to do these things for each other. And again, I don't want to overemphasize, you know, the among you or within your towns, but those are just these small phrases that was really emphasizing these people are a part of me. And I've moved so many times, and I've met new people so many times. I've been the stranger and the outsider. And the effort that it takes for me to then find the new people in the neighborhood or the new people in the congregation, it's a lot of work. And that's what God is telling me to do, is to be active and to connect and to reach out and to find and to know how I'm going to love wherever I am at. And it's an important lesson that we need to think about. Why are we going to do this? First of all, you were a slave. Verse 12, again, it might point to the purpose of the feast, but I'm going to hold it to this. Why are we going to include all these other people? Because you were a mess, and God had to deliver you and hand you a silver platter. You know, here's food every day as you're wandering through the wilderness. Your sandals won't wear out as you're wandering through the wilderness. Here's everything you need as you're wandering through the wilderness. And you're going to skimp out on somebody else, right? Why are we going to do this? So that you will be altogether joyful. That's how he ends it. God is blessing you so that you will be altogether joyful. We have to be the ones that go out and work to include. Not you make sure that at some point you have said in your life, everyone's invited, and then you have the look on your face that says, don't come. You know, there's that kind of personality. Yeah, ask me anything you want, and my door's open. You know, and the door might physically be open, but man, there's the ice wall that's descended between, you know, so that no one can come in. And there's that parable where Jesus, well, the master says, go out to the highways and the hedges and compel the people to come in. That needs to be what our heart is, whether it's sharing the gospel or some other form of love. The gospel is going to be the most important and powerful love, but it is the sharing of love. We were slaves, and are we going to be an unmerciful, the parable of the unmerciful servant, I've been forgiven much, and am I going to be a jerk to my fellow servants around me? All right, just one more passage, and then we'll go back to chapter 10 to close up. Deuteronomy 24. This one's a little bit different. At the very end of the chapter, it's talking about just some different laws. This is more about justice. It's not about sacrifices and things, but just our operations together. Verse 17 and 18. You shall not pervert the justice due to the sojourner or to the fatherless, or take a widow's garment in pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I command you to do this. And then 19 to the end of the chapter. When you reap the harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back and get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over them again. For it shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterward. For it shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this. We need to remember what we came from, right? We need to be the people that are giving justice and the people that are not exploiting other people. We need to defend these people, the ones who are lowly. We need to be sharing the bounty that we have. When we are going out and we forget, I think it's a really interesting discussion. Shouldn't we be thorough? Doesn't God want, you know, like good Christian workers? We were talking about that, you know, working for your boss and, you know, not just eye service, but we're doing a really good job. Oops, I forgot some wheat in the field. God says, don't go back and get it. You know, it's kind of seems counterintuitive. But you leave it there. In the case of the book of Ruth, they were leaving extra on purpose. That's the way that we need to be. Why? Because we were a slave. We needed so much help to get just to where we are right now. Sometimes it still feels like we're just treading water. And we need God's help every day. And this is the sort of help that we need to give to other people. I think it's interesting. It says you're going to leave it out there, which means that they're going to be the ones that go out and harvest and get those leftover pieces, right? So there is that little bit of work in there. Because sometimes, you know, if a man will not work, then neither shall he eat. We can also make it easy for people that are having a hard time. You know, I'm pretty sure that God has made it easy for us. Jesus is the one who invites us if we have a heavy load in Matthew chapter 11. And so we can help those people out too. There are some other passages in Deuteronomy. One in particular, on the idea of love and brotherly love. The entirety of chapter 15, which, because I'm talking about other stuff, that's the Sabbath year, and that the seventh year release. And the entire concept of that is brotherly love and letting the person go. And I can't remember if debts are spoken about here, but even letting the debts go. And when you're letting them go, you're letting them go with, you know, big armfuls of supply as they go. That's all brotherly love. In chapter 22, it talks about the lost ox and how you're going out of your way to help your brother, to help him if he's in this difficult situation. In chapter 24, it's talking about a lot like what we just read there, with more on the pledges and exploitation. All of these ideas about loving and going out of our way to love and to care for other people. It's neat to see it written in this law form, because it gives it some specific ways of doing it. And though I don't plan on celebrating the Feast of Booths and Weeks and obeying that specific version of it, it helps me to just see ways that I can look out at you or at people outside these walls and be looking for those opportunities to reach out and to love and to care. Because there are some unlovable people out there, and we're called to love them. There's some lovable people out there, and it's really fun to love them, but there are unlovable people. Right? And they probably need it more than others. And we need to do what we can to be ready for that and to care for them. Let's close by reading Deuteronomy chapter 10 again. Deuteronomy chapter 10, 12 through 22. Again, the concept of this lesson is really, it was spoken to people originally in Deuteronomy and me tonight, primarily to people that are saved. Isn't that the context of Deuteronomy? You were saved. You were slaves. And that's what we are here. We were slaves to sin. If you're a slave to sin, guess what? I mean, we need to get you out of that, so that you can experience this love to the full. God loves the stranger, but one of those things that he does as he loves the stranger is he's trying to heal and to save and to deliver you from that situation. We all want to help you with that. And if you are an Israelite delivered from the slavery of Egypt and you're wandering in the wilderness of sin, we need to get you out of that too. We want to talk with you. We want to help you. We want to pray with you. So have that in mind. I'm going to read through these verses again, talking about how great God is in his care for us. And then we'll have our closing song. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 12. "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and statutes of the Lord, which I am commanding you today for your good. Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth and all that is in it. Yet the Lord set his heart in love on your fathers and chose their offspring after them, you above all peoples, as you are this day. Circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and for the widow, and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and hold fast to him. And by his name you shall swear. He is your praise. He is your God who has done for you these great and terrifying things that your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt, 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven. God isn't going to make me as numerous as the stars of heaven, but that image of what God has taken all of us and made us to be. If you need help from God, he will make you as numerous as the stars of heaven. He will bless you in that way too. And if there's anyone who needs prayers or help from the saints, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing.